And Mike Berto is here with us, the chief healthcare economist for Blue Cross Blue Shield Louisiana, 877-217-5757. And this dovetails rather well. We went from a man who survived COVID to a man who's dealing with COVID-19 on a daily basis in a much different way, but he is a citizen. And Mike, if you've heard him many times on this show, he's been beaten up a few times in his life, cancer survivor. You're here in studio. God bless you. You got through some road conditions that, by the way, aren't that bad today. But nonetheless, COVID has overwhelmed our world, and it has overwhelmed your world. How's it going right now?
Well, the good news is that we're seeing a significant decrease from a really ugly peak in hospitalizations and in deaths due to COVID-19, which really kind of maxed out in the first couple weeks of January. If you take a look at the data, in January, there were over 2,000 people statewide in the hospital with COVID, which was a record. We had barely got that high, even when it first hit way back in March. Now we're down to around 800 people. I'm not encouraging people to relax. We still have to do the basics, to wear the masks. We need to wash up, and we need to make sure that if you're offered a vaccine, please take it. It's one of the safest vaccines that's, both of them, Moderna and Pfizer, some of the safest vaccines we've ever seen.
You've gotten the vaccine?
I am trying so hard right now. I'm not old enough to trigger the vaccine. I already had COVID. I don't know if I told you, but COVID went through our house in October. It struck me how different our cases were. My wife had it, I had it, and my daughter, who lives with us, who's in her 20s, had it. And we had very different symptoms. I didn't even know I was sick. You know, I went and got tested because my daughter presented with a really high fever and chest pains. And my wife got it. She was in bed for 10 days. I mean, she had a very tough case. So that's the thing with COVID, you know. You really don't know what it's going to do to you until after you get it.
Did you have fever?
I did not. I never had a fever. I had post-nasal drip, a cough, and I lost my taste of smell and my sense of smell and taste completely. In fact, to this day, it's the oddest thing. I'll be in the middle of eating a meal and everything's great. This tastes so good. And then I'll take another bite and it tastes horrible.
Really?
Like somebody slipped something into my fork when I wasn't watching. And I've also got some lingering GI issues that I never had before. I never had to take, you know, Pepcid or any kind of antacids before. But since COVID, I've had to kind of add that to my regimen.
But when we hear cases like Ronnie Anderson, it affects people in various ways. And Ronnie is a bit older than you. Age appears to be one of the biggest factors in how people are affected.
Yeah, it's a risk factor, but the problem is none of this stuff is really predictive. I can't profile you and say you're going to go in the hospital and you aren't. We just don't know, and it affects various people differently. I track the data all the way back since day one, and something like 15 to 18% of the people over 70 who caught COVID passed away before their time because of COVID. And 15% is a lot. That's a big number.
Well, the numbers now from the Centers for Disease Control, and it's curious that you're joining us because they report numbers a bit higher than other entities. The deaths in the U.S. now, 500,150. We have officially crossed the half million mark. Cases, 28,385. And 385,824. Now, if your family had not gotten it, your wife and your daughter, you might not have ever known you had it.
You know, it's a great point. I didn't experience any symptoms that were any different from a normal fall allergy issue until I lost taste and smell. That was bizarre. I mean, I woke up one day and I couldn't smell anything and I couldn't taste anything. And it lasted about 5 or 6 days before it went away. But the three of us had such different symptoms. It occurred to me, if it was 50 years ago and the three of us had gone to the doctor, no doctor in his right mind would have diagnosed us with the same virus. You know, it
because
really was
how
the,
it affects you.
Yeah, it really was the testing. And that's the danger, is that it's so unpredictable from person to person. So when I tell people, you know, mask up and get the vaccine if it's offered to you, I think it's very important that you do.
Mike Berto, Chief Healthcare Economist, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Louisiana. And we will go to the phone lines in just a moment. But, by the way, the number is 877-217-5757. But this has affected Blue Cross. You deal with healthcare, and everything has been overwhelmed by COVID-19.
Well, COVID kind of sucks all the oxygen out of the room in a lot of ways when you're talking about healthcare nowadays. The average, last time I checked, the average COVID hospitalization was costing around $90,000, somewhere in that range. Mm-hmm. Now, nothing like our friend before had, you know, nobody stays in 78 days. That's a miracle, right, that he's back with us. And I guarantee you that costs way more than $90,000. But the good news is the federal government has opened up a wide open enrollment period in the middle of the year for health insurance products that normally are not available like this, except for 6 weeks in November and December. The healthcare.gov website is open for business in February, and they're going to leave it open for 90 days, mm-hmm. which is unheard of.
Well, next month will mark, 11 years now since Obamacare went into effect. And we've had twists and turns and near parting of the ways, but it did not happen. So it has been preserved, but is it alive and well, or is it on life support as well?
Well, I always judge whether a program is alive and well two ways. Number one, how many people are participating in it? And number two, how resonant is the funding? How easy is it for the Fed to fund the thing? And the ACA changes, the Medicaid expansion, which Louisiana participates in, and the healthcare.gov premium credits and tax subsidies essentially run about $100 to $120 billion a year, and there's really no debate anymore about funding it. It's pretty much automatic. It just happens every year, and right now there are probably 22 million people or so that have health insurance because the ACA happened that would not have it otherwise, about 22 million, and I expect that number to continue to grow as we move through these economic challenges forced on us by COVID.
Paul in Opelousas. Paul, you're on with Mike Berto of Blue Cross. Hi, Paul.
How you doing, Jim? How you doing, Mike? Fine. Just a question from a consumer side. You know, there's a million ways to get better health care and the options and the this and the that. Who would be a good person that you could sit down with and say, look, what's the best option for my parents or myself or my couple, independent of selling insurance, that could direct you in a better direction?
Well, I'll tell you, I'll be happy to talk to you about that offline. I have family members that I give advice to all the time, people I love and care about what they should do, and it goes like this. If you can get insurance through your employer, that is usually your best bet. If you are not getting a decent offer of coverage from an employer or you're under 65 and you don't have access to that, healthcare.gov has plans available with enormous money from the Fed to help pay for that stuff. So healthcare.gov is the way to go. If you want to talk to a licensed agent that you don't have to pay anything to do what he does, I've got a phone number here, 1-844-GET-BLUE. 844-GET-BLUE will put you in touch with guys who I've known for 20 or 30 years who do this stuff in their sleep and take good care of my family.
This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana, the authority on health care in Louisiana. I don't know of anybody who knows more about the Affordable Care Act. Next month on March 22nd, I believe, it'll be 11 years since President Barack Obama signed it. And Joe Biden was at his side, then vice president. And if you heard the comments from the then vice president, his comment to the president at the time was, "This is a big effing deal." And he didn't say effing either. And 11 years later, it is so round. It's been attacked, as we know, but it is around and it is still part of the process. And you say, 22 million Americans are taking advantage of it?
Yes. And 36 states have expanded their Medicaid programs because of the ACA.
But 14 have not.
Yeah, 14, 12, is it 12
I
or 14?
I think it's 14. It's 14.
14 sounds right, yeah.
877-217-5757, David in Atlanta. David, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. Mr. Berto, if you had a pre-existing illness, given that Jeff Landry wants to abolish the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, would you prefer to stay on Obamacare if you had a pre-existing illness or switch over to Mr. Landry's alternative health care plan for people with pre-existing illnesses? Which would you choose?
Well, that's an excellent question, but I am not aware of Mr. Landry's plan, so I don't feel qualified to comment on it.
Well, he is an opponent, and by the way, Senator Bill Cassidy voted to do away with Obamacare. Senator John Kennedy did. Most of our congressional delegation, all the Republicans did. Garrett Graves, Clay Higgins, Mike Johnson, Steve Scalise, they all voted to get rid of it. But remember, John McCain came in and did the thumbs down. And if not for McCain's vote, it would have been gone. What would the world have been like if that had happened?
Well, I think what kind of gets lost in the shuffle of that conversation is the thing that our legislative delegation really was opposed to was all of the rules and regulations that the ACA put on businesses, which are never challenged in court and never really up for debate. Because businesses had to change their entire mode of designing, offering, and compensating their employees for health insurance. And it put an enormous a lot of work on mm-hmm. businesses, tax burdens, compliance burdens. I guarantee you every business in America now has a much better relationship with brokers, consultants, and a bigger HR department just because of the ACA. So I suspect that's the part they had the real problem with.
Now, I run a small business, and we have some health care advantages for employees, and we have Blue Cross.
Yes.
But we were grandfathered in.
Thanks.
We're grandfathered in, so essentially we have the same plan, but I can't do any alteration of the plan, or we would not be grandfathered in.
Right. What you've done is you've avoided the ACA because you had your plan already in place on March 23rd of 2010 when the ACA was signed. You were already in business. And so the ACA specified if you had your plan already in place prior to that date, you can keep the existing plan, but you're not allowed to make changes that economic factors might have driven you to change over the years, except in very limited ways. And still, about 20% of our business clients are like you. They're hanging on to a grandfathered plan because they don't want to comply with all of the rules and regs that
well,
the ACA
lets
out.
But it's not like
out.
We're not offering health care. We are.
Oh, plans.
It comes down to dollars and cents decision.
Exactly. I'm not bemoaning the state of what you're offering. It could be the exact same insurance.
It is.
But once the feds take over a marketplace, you know, they federalized mm-hmm. the small group and the individual marketplace, and what you've done is you've managed to hang on to a plan that's actually regulated at the state level.
Now, if businesses did not have health care for their employees,
right,
how is the Affordable Care Act affected them?
Well, the ACA has a beautiful avenue for businesses under 50 lives who don't offer insurance. Their employees are entitled to go to healthcare.gov, like this 90-day open enrollment window we have right now, unheard of, on healthcare.gov, and buy their own individual policies. And based on their income, they'll have access to federal money to help pay their premiums. And if they're low income, like somebody who makes minimum wage or in that zone, the Medicaid system in Louisiana, they'll get checked for Medicaid when they apply. So they may end up with free insurance, no copays, no deductibles.
Doug in on Jefferson. Doug, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Doug.
Good morning, gentlemen. And just wanted to make a couple of points on this very worthy subject. One, the fact that you're talking about a grandfathered policy shows that there was a lot of flexibility, and the changes that were mentioned were phased in over, 4 or 5 years from the time the bill was passed. And the second is that the Republican alternatives that were pushed would have ended the Medicaid expansion by last year, so we would have potentially lost that as the pandemic hit. Luckily, since it didn't pass, we didn't have to face that problem.
All right. Thank you, Doug. Mike?
Yeah, I think it's important that we have the widest, broadest, easiest to access safety net that we can have in these times. I mean, I think Louisiana, from a health insurance perspective, was better positioned to deal with COVID than any other state in the SEC, for example, in the Southeast, because we had expanded Medicaid and we had a continuum of coverage for folks from zero income all the way to about 400% of the poverty line. Good coverage.
Well, there are 11 states in the SEC, as I've noted, and of those 11, Louisiana may be the only one that has expanded Medicaid. Arkansas does, I know that.
And Kentucky, too, I believe.
Okay,
yeah.
So that's three.
I'm cheating a little.
Three out of 11.
Right.
But of the 14 that don't, 8 are in the Southeastern Conference.
That's right.
And as noted, the SEC senators voted 19-3 to acquit Donald Trump last week. The rest of the country voted 54-24. So if the 39 states minus the SEC had only been counted, President Trump would have been convicted on an article of impeachment. Jennifer in Mid-City. Jennifer, you're on with Mike Berto. Hi, Jennifer.
Good morning. I, as a consumer of insurance, have two issues. One issue is I would love to change jobs, or I would love to work for myself, but it becomes difficult when I think of having to leave my employee-based insurance and cover something that's going to be, you know, $1,000 a month that I'm going to have to cover. And I look at, like, I know Blue Cross does a lot of granting and, like, angel awards and things like that. And I'm curious how, you know, it's wonderful to be a good neighbor to our community, but it's another thing when that's on the back of me having to pay for high insurance premiums. So I'm curious how y'all justify.
Yeah. Look, thanks for the question. First thing, your employer's insurance is always going to be less expensive because employers in general are very generous when it comes to subsidizing their employees' insurance. Blue Cross, we require them to cover at least half. Most of them cover 75%. So you're not going to find too many people who are willing to cover 75% of your costs for you, but employers generally will. Your second concern about money being spent in grants or rebates or hurricane assistance, angel awards, stuff like that, you can rest assured that that is almost imperceptible on your premiums. The federal government requires us to spend at least 85% of the money you kick in premiums on nothing but health care. We have to run the entire operation on 15 points of margin, and if we miss, you get a rebate.
Nancy and Hammond. Nancy, you're on with Mike Berto. Thank you, Jennifer.
Hey,
Nancy.
Berto. I have been a Blue Cross policy owner for probably since I was around 18 years old.
Thank you.
And my parents were also on it, and I have two brothers that were on it. When I started my career and working with people that had other insurance, which I worked all over the country, I kept my Blue Cross policy because that was the right thing to do for the state of Louisiana. And I worked in New Orleans for 16 years, had my Blue Cross policies, even though I worked for other companies. And the interesting thing about it, I won't say his last name, but Mr. Brian and I became really good friends. And when my premium got to $1,253 a month, one of the gentlemen called me and said, "You can't even afford to buy your medicine." So what I'm actually asking you for future generations that are coming down the pike, Blue Cross has one of the best understandings of what illnesses are.
Would you answer?
I'm not sure what the question was. Did I miss it?
We're short on time, but Nancy, you were rambling a bit. Could you ask a question if you have one?
Yes. The question is, what are we going to do for the younger people that want to stay on a Blue Cross policy?
Yes. Okay, great question. When you buy an individual health insurance policy today, because of the Affordable Care Act, the control of the pricing and the way money is distributed between the young and the old is specified by a federal agency that was created by the ACA, and they haven't changed that allocation in 11 years. And the original allocation was skewed in such a way, frankly, it punished young folks. It forced them to pay more for their insurance than they actually would ever dream of taking back out. So we've got some work to do at the federal level to correct the situation you're talking about.
Thank you so much, Nancy, for your question and for listening in Hammond, where we have a lot of listeners. Today at 2, by the way, statewide, and on this station, you'll hear the Governor's Show, Ask the Governor. For our program, signature support is provided by First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and from Vantage Health Plan. For Katie Ann McDonald, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned.